All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show.
Because one thing I've learned is this, in politics and in combat, cowardice is contagious, but so is courage. And if you're willing to be the first person over those ramparts, you will be shocked at how many people will come with you. I'm asking you to come with me. I'm asking you to be a part of the generation that will restore the promise of this country and breathe new life into it.
Hi, this is Nick Freitas, and welcome back to Making the Argument. This is our final podcast with respect to the 10-issue podcast that we did ahead of the November 3rd election that we have, which will decide, well, a number of things to include the direction of the country. So on November 3rd, I'm running against Abigail Spanberger. We're encouraging everyone to get out there and vote. And please, please share all of these podcasts. There's been a lot of questions about where I stand on issues. We put them on our website. We do a Facebook Live Town Hall every Tuesday at 8 p.m. But unfortunately, Abigail will not debate me, right? She finally agreed to a forum, but that's it. And it's weeks after early voting has already started. So if you know someone that has a question about where I stand on policy, right, they're going to see a lot of attack ads, but I take this opportunity to come directly to you and tell you where I stand, why I stand there, and what I plan to do when I get to Washington, D.C. So please share these with friends that have questions. Today, we're going to be talking about environmental policy, you know, climate change, global warming. What is the best way for us to not only ensure a strong economy, but take care of our environment at the same time? And I do not think these are mutually exclusive ideas. I really believe, based off of my faith, just based off of common sense, that it's important to take care of the environment because we rely upon it not just for not just for life itself, but also to make our lives better. I'm in a district where agriculture is one of the top industries, and nobody is more concerned with taking care of the environment than the very people that make a living and raise their families within that environment. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about the overall strategy going forward. So obviously over the last several years, there's been a lot of discussion about climate change. At first, it was global warming, and then some of the data didn't support that that was going the way it wants, so they kind of flipped to this climate change. And I remember someone asking me once, they said, what do you think about climate change? And I had somebody else on a panel I was on say, well, it's all a hoax. Well, here's my position. If you're asking me whether or not I think human beings affect their environment, the answer is absolutely. This is beyond debate. Of course, people interacting with the environment have an effect on it, and in many cases have an adverse effect on it. So the question is how do we go forward achieving the sort of economy that we want, achieving the sort of lifestyle we want, while at the same time sustaining our planet to make sure that it's there for future generations? The first thing that we need to understand is this. A lot of these solutions coming out of the Democratic Party, whether it's the Green New Deal, whether it's some of the different schemes that they have with respect to taxing or regulations, a lot of these things have a lot of problems, not just for the economy, but for the environment itself. And one of the things that I find very interesting is that when I talk about climate change, I always put a big focus on property rights. Because when you allow people to have strong property rights, it does a couple of things that are very, very beneficial for the environment. One, it punishes companies for engaging in polluting. Because if you pollute or you're providing a product in such a way and the manufacturer of that product affects my property, I can take you to court and you can actually be sued for that and you can lose a lot of money in the process. And that does one of two things right off the bat. Two, it provides justice to the person that has been the victim of pollution. But the second thing it does is it actually provides a positive incentive within the economy for companies to find new ways to provide products and services in a more environmental environmentally friendly way. So it provides that sort of natural incentive structure that we all want. But without property rights, you actually lose that. And a lot of the solutions that I see coming from the left have to do with a couple of different strategies. One strategy is the reduction of property rights. So it's actually taking away your ability to defend yourself in court when you have been the victim of pollution or some sort of other industrial activity that has adversely affected your quality of life or your property. The second thing they advocate for is more central planning and government control over the economy. And here's the question I've got to ask on that. It's not as if central planning of the economy and the reduction of property rights has not been tried in other countries around the world, from the former USSR to China, Venezuela, Cuba, Angola. All of these countries tested these ideas of greater central planning and reducing property rights in the name of the public or the common good. Now, here's my question. Do any of these countries have an environmental policy you would want to emulate? No, of course they don't. China, the former Soviet Union, Venezuela, Angola, Cuba, India, all of them have engaged down this path with respect to their economic policy and with respect to their private property policy, and all of them have led to not only economic disaster, but environmental disaster. And there's a couple of reasons for this. The first reason is the government is not good at centrally planning the economy because the government can't possibly know what millions of people want. The only way you can find that out is by allowing free people to actively engage in the economy and by allowing businesses and providers to find the most efficient and effective way to use scarce resources in order to provide them the products and services in the marketplace. So allowing the free market to be able to function is very, very important to ensuring not only sound economic policy, but ultimately good environmental policy. And here's why. If you actually want things like green energy to be able to develop, well, if you put that in the hands of the government, whether it's government agencies developing green energy or whether it's government subsidies to select companies that have the best lobbyists, you actually pervert the whole green industry research and development process. Because inevitably, when the government starts throwing money around, they're no longer concerned about making the best product that would work within the free market, that would work based off of consumer demand. Now they're only concerned about getting the government subsidy. So instead of creating better, more efficient green energy products that actually work, they're just worried about checking off a box in order to get the subsidy. And again, you pervert the research and development process, which is essential for finding better green energy sources. The other component that's really important about taking care of your environment is, here's what seems to be true no matter where we go. Wealthier countries tend to care more about environmental concerns. And the reason for that is because they've achieved a standard of living and comfort. People are not starving in the streets. People are not dying of illnesses every 5 minutes because your economy has reached a certain level of wealth and prosperity where you can actually allocate resources to making sure that we do things more efficiently and effectively. If your civilization is starving, if your country can't feed its own people, they tend to care a whole lot less about doing things in an environmentally sound way, and instead they do whatever they think is the quickest method in order to get those necessary resources to the people that need it. The other thing that we need to understand about with a lot of this green energy technology, whether it be electric cars, whether it be wind turbines, is that they also present environmental problems as well. A lot of times these things require rare earth minerals, which are being mined by some child in Africa right now in order to provide some sort of green energy source, which doesn't even meet our energy needs. And oh, by the way, when it gets decommissioned, like a lot of these wind turbines do, they go into massive landfills and never biodegrade. Not to mention the fact that wind turbines have been really, really bad for the bird population. There's actually species of birds that are really going close to the point, if not extinction, but endangerment because of wind turbines. So we need to understand that if we're really concerned about the environment, we have to take a comprehensive look at what are the best solutions. It's one of the reasons why if we're serious about actually reducing carbon emissions, we need to look at nuclear energy, which has been determined time and time again to be a safe way to supply massive amounts of energy with very, very little carbon footprint. But unfortunately, a lot of the people on the left don't want to see nuclear energy. They want to scare everybody with things like Chernobyl. Again, nuclear energy has developed and has advanced so far that we actually see the positive benefits. In fact, France gets 70% of its energy through nuclear power. So if we're really serious about doing this, we have to take a comprehensive approach, and we need to recognize that the free market and property rights are our ally, not only in providing a better economy, but also preserving our environment at the same time. Now, this begs the question is, when is it appropriate for the government to intervene? Well, just like they talk about with property rights, there's an appropriate role for government to protect those property rights and to provide a legal system which allows people to be able to go to court against a big developer and be able to win if the facts and evidence is on their side. The other thing that we can talk about is what we refer to in economics as negative externalities. So obviously, when somebody sets up a factory to produce a product or a service, the negative externality is when the pollution comes out and obviously has effects that harm somebody in the process. The way that we can sometimes adjust for those effects is we can say that the people that have been adversely affected have to be compensated appropriately. Now, depending on the compensation, two things happen. One, those people now receive some sort of benefit as a result of the negative externality. The other one is it encourages companies to actually engage in safer and cleaner ways to provide those products and services so they don't have to pay out those additional costs associated with compensating the people that were adversely affected by their activity. Right? So there are ways that the government can engage in the process in order to make sure that we do have a cleaner environment and that people are being protected. But one of the worst ways that the government does this right now is through very specific regulations where instead of setting certain goals or protecting people that have been hurt, they come up with certain plans. And let me give you a perfect example of this. One of those plans had to do with things like the catalytic converter. So when Congress was trying to pass regulations in order to reduce smog, they mandated that cars sold in the United States had to have a catalytic converter. Now, a lot of people might look at that at face value and say, well, this is moving us in the right direction. Here's the problem. There was already existing technology that was better for the environment and cheaper to produce than the catalytic converter. But Congress actually passed a law which required cars being sold in this country to rip out the better technology and put in catalytic converters if they were going to be sold in the United States. So again, when the government is looking at policy, it is far better for the government to set goals or standards as opposed to trying to micromanage the process by where those standards are met. Because what we find is while government and bureaucracy is not very innovative, creative, or adaptable, the private sector is. So it can be appropriate at times to set goals with respect to environmental policy, but then allow the freedom within the marketplace for innovation to actually meet those goals in the safest and most cost-effective way possible. I want to end this segment on something that's kind of personal to me. We see what's going on in California right now with the wildfires, and obviously we had the Camp Fire that took place in Northern California and Paradise, California, which caused massive devastation. And you see a lot of politicians out there right now blaming global warming or climate change on the wildfires in California. And this is the part where I think it's very, very important. Because what I'm starting to see is people are not following the science. They're not following logic or reason. They have a particular political agenda, and now they are using the environment in order to achieve an economic or policy agenda that I think has very little to do with actually preserving our environment. If you look at what's going on in California right now with the wildfires, it might be really easy for Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris or any other Democrat to say that this is a result of climate change or bad environmental policy. They're half right. It is a result of bad environmental policy. Bad environmental policy, which has been a result of left-wing progressive ideology within the California state legislature. And let me give you some examples of this. Because California has already tried to implement its own Green New Deal, it has had certain consequences where PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, which manages the power for the vast majority of California, is in a situation where instead of actually replacing some of the infrastructure they have with respect to plants or power lines, they've had to push a lot of money into solar and wind turbines. Well, do you want to know what started the actual brush fire in Northern California? It was a downed power line that had been set up in 1921. It was a 100-year-old power line, and they knew additional work needed to be done on those lines, but in order to comply with green energy policy coming from the Democratic Party in California, they had to allocate resources away from fixing existing infrastructure into these Green New Deal energy policies, which provides a fraction of our overall energy consumption needs within California. So they failed to actually replace those lines. What are some other things they've done with respect to policy? Well, it used to be that we could do things like controlled burns. So in areas of the season in California, where the fire threat was not as high, they would do controlled burns. And you see this all over the United States. Well, in California, they started to restrict that. They also started to restrict selective logging, which means that you had a great deal of underbrush, plus you had a lot of old dead trees. Those make fantastic kindling for wildfires. And so what happened? Well, when you have an infrastructure that is not up to standard, when you have an environmental policy that has made it impossible for you to selectively log or clear underbrush or do controlled burns in order to protect it, well, the end result is an entire town with over 10,000 homes went up in Paradise, California. And the reason why this is personal to me is because I had a lot of family that lost their homes in that fire. From my wife's parents to cousins of mine, we had several people die in those fires as a result. Now, I care about all those things, not only from just a human rights standpoint. I care about all those things, not only from an economic standpoint. I care about those things from an environmental standpoint. And here's the question that I would like to ask all of these chic politicians that put through these Green New Deal energy policies, that put forward all these policies that were supposedly there to help the environment. Do you think it would have been worse for the environment to continue to do selective logging, to continue to do controlled burns, to continue to put money into the infrastructure, the existing power infrastructure that we already had? Do you think that if that would have prevented that wildfire, and studies suggest it would have, do you think that in the end would have been worse for the environment? Or do you think it was better for the environment to impose all of these restrictions and then have an entire town go up in flames? Because I'm willing to bet that the total cumulative environmental cost of those controlled burns, selective logging, and investment in existing power grids and infrastructure, I'm willing to bet the environmental cost of that is nothing compared to the environmental cost of 10,000 homes going up in flames and sending all of that up into the atmosphere and the environment. But these are the sort of questions that never seem to get asked by people that are pushing things like the Green New Deal. If we're serious about protecting the environment, there is a number of things that we can do. But these sort of asinine government regulations only creates worse policies and worse circumstances, not only for the economy, but ultimately for the environment as well. And so as we go forward, we need to understand something. If you've got a bunch of politicians that want more central planning of the economy, if you've got a lot of politicians that want to erode your property rights because they want to decide what development looks like, they want to decide what economic progress looks like, and then all of a sudden that they're telling you that they need this power in order to protect the environment, just remember, these were the same politicians that were telling you they needed this sort of centralized control over the economy, but they used to try to sell it to you based off of economic concerns. They said it was going to be better for you economically. They said it was going to be better for the middle class. And when they absolutely failed in that, they didn't switch the desire for more control over the economy. Instead, they just found a new reason to justify the enormous power grabs that they're actually looking for. And so that's the reason why I become so skeptical of the progressive movement when it comes to environmental policy. Because what I see them doing is walking out the old, same, tired central planning and economic takeovers that they've advocated for in countries all around the world. And not only does it fail us economically, it certainly fails the environment as well. So going forward, here's what we need to do. Make sure that you have a good, robust, free market that allows for the sort of innovation that we need within green energy so that we can actually appreciate more of our energy coming from safer sources, whether it is things like more developed solar or nuclear power. We also need to make sure that we're protecting property rights so that when somebody is a victim of pollution, that they have the means necessary to be able to seek recourse in the courts, which will provide positive incentives to industry to find cleaner and safer and more environmentally friendly ways in order to produce the goods and services which make all of our lives better. And then finally, when it does come to negative externalities, there is a certain role for the government to protect the environment, but set goals. Don't try to micromanage the process and take all the innovative and creative adaptability out of the free market and then put it in the hands of bureaucracies which have never been good at actually responding to new technologies and processes in order to make our economy better and our environment safer and cleaner. This is Nick Freitas with Making the Argument. This has been a discussion on environmental policy. I want to thank you all for sticking with us through the entire 10 episodes that we've done on the podcast, addressing a wide range of issues from foreign policy, environmental policy, taxes, regulations, COVID, prescription drugs, healthcare. I hope this has been beneficial for you. And again, we encourage you to share this with your friends. There's a lot of bad information being put out, as there is every election cycle. And if people really want to know where I stand and why I stand there, these podcasts provide an excellent example to be able to show people what I really believe. And again, I hope I've done a good job for you in grounding all of this in facts, evidence, science, and a coherent political philosophy, which you'll be able to rely on when I go to Washington, D.C. Again, we're looking forward to continuing these podcasts in the future. We're going to come up with some more issues to talk about. As we get closer to November 3rd, we'll be talking about some of the things that are going on within the campaign. But the ultimate purpose of this podcast is to equip people to make arguments, people that believe in individual liberty, believe in property rights, believe in free markets and self-determination. This is about equipping you to be able to make arguments on the key issues of the day, and I hope we're doing a good job of actually getting that out there. We would love to have more of your feedback. Remember to go to nick4va.com. You can actually see the podcast, everything that we've gone over. If you have a question about a previous podcast that we've done, please put that in there, because we will be doing podcasts in the future where we spend the entire episode just exclusively going over questions from our audience. So once again, thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.